Hello and welcome to From Fear to Fire, Secrets to Overcome Fear, Embrace Your Gifts, and Achieve Success. This is the place where real people share real challenges, where you can find a common bond and uncommon wisdom through their journeys to help you move from fear to fire. And don't forget to subscribe. And yes, I am Heather Hansen O'Neill, your host today. We always start with a quote. So today's quote is by Jim Rohn. Attitude is greatly shaped by influence and association. Now, my guest today was recommended to me by a raving fan of hers, a mutual connection. And, you know, sometimes when you've got somebody raving about somebody, you're like, oh, come on, they can't be that good. But when I got on a call with Teresa, I have to say that I was so impressed because she was simultaneously fired up, totally present, authentic, and just real and engaged. And I absolutely loved it. So, of course, I immediately invited her onto the show. So we have today Teresa de Grobois, and she is the number one international best-selling author of Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential, which is now a bestseller in 7 countries. A 4-time international best-selling author, Teresa teaches marketing courses around the globe to business leaders and entrepreneurs on how to create massively successful word-of-mouth campaigns. She's got some great stuff. I've experienced it since then. Teresa heads the International Evolutionary Business Council, a global community of speakers and influencers dedicated to teaching the principles of success. So I am really fired up to invite on. Hello, Teresa. How are you today?
I am wonderful, Heather. Thank you so much for having me on. And I love that you almost said revolutionary, because we are.
It kind of is. Yeah. It's a really great concept. So I can't wait to share that as well. But how about we start, because I've been doing my homework on you and learning a little bit more about you and what you offer. And I'd love for you to share with our listeners today a little bit about where you come from.
Wow. Well, I am a backwoods girl, actually. I'm not just from Canada, but I'm from Northern Canada. I used to spend my summers in a remote backwoods cabin that we'd go in by boat, no electricity. So I actually come from some pretty humble beginnings, which, you know, go figure that I should become really inspired by learning about influence, because I started out as the quintessential opposite of the influential. I literally not only had no influence, but I felt like a duck out of water, even in a crowded room. So
it's
been an interesting journey. Yeah. And it's fascinating to come from such a juxtaposition, because I really get how sometimes people can see influence as such a foreign entity that is something only accessible to others. And really it isn't. It's just so simple. And I love seeing people learn about it.
You know, I think that that's maybe part of what came through for me, that you take with you your journey, just like we all do, right? We carry with us our experiences that make us very unique, who we are, and that presence that you brought to our call, I just felt it as being so real, so authentic. Now, you've through some kind of radical career changes to become someone who teaches thought leaders and emerging thought leaders. I mean, you really have to, there's a lot that goes into that. There's a confidence and a level of experience, right? And how you teach them how to have a greater impact on the world. I mean, that's weighty, you know? How did you get to this path?
I'm chuckling, hearing confidence. I'm like, well, there was a certain amount of insanity involved. So, you know, and I think sometimes the change agents of the world, we are the ones that people labeled crazy at some point in our life for, you know, really having the guts to completely reinvent ourselves, you know, and because sometimes life takes us down a path that just doesn't feel powerful for us, you know, and it can end up being there's sort of this comfort zone, and we all have a lot of self-sabotage and limiting beliefs that, oh, I can't possibly put myself out there or step up to lead or really take the leap and completely reinvent myself. And yet usually it's that self-sabotage and those inner dialogues that are actually in the way of you really living a tuned in, turned on life where you can do something deeply significant in the world if you just have the courage to take those first steps.
And you said it, it's usually the crazy ones that are willing to face, you know, whatever failures might come along the way to success, right?
Yeah.
Now, you know, I have some questions about, you know, how you can help our audience with this. But before we get there, like, did you use some words that I can't just let slide by because I speak to them all day long, things like self-limiting beliefs and fears and sabotage. And so was there a one defining moment for you or several or just an element of something that you were afraid of that you overcame?
Oh, you know, I love this whole conversation because, and as I'm sure you know, Heather, there's a lot of research now showing that most human beings, you know, other than sociopaths, but most regular human beings invent their most significant self-limiting beliefs around the age of 2 and 3 when they're first learning language. Mm. In other words, whatever those first failures we ever had in life, whatever we told ourselves in those moments become a repetitive pattern for us, right? So, I mean, I can always actually remember the moment where I created my most significant self-limiting conversation. I was probably around 2 or 3. And, you know, of course, we used to spend the summer months always in the cabin, but we had just come back from the cabin. Our whole family standing around the kitchen of our, you know, 100-year-old house, tiny little kitchen. All my cousins are visiting, so the room is just packed full of people. And the room is buzzing because my grandmother's going to take us all to the movies, which in my family is a really big deal. You know,
yeah.
My mom is concerned with the morals of Hollywood movie makers and we don't have money to take a family of 9 kids to the movies, you know. But somehow my older brothers convinced my mom that Walt Disney's not the worst guy on the planet. And my grandmother's springing for a movie. So everybody in the room is going to the movie. And I look across the room just in time to hear my mom say, "Teresa can't go. She's too little."
Oh,
I know. And in that moment of utter devastation, 3-year-old me decides I'm too small to play with the big kids.
Oh, yeah.
And that inner dialogue sticks, right? And so at that point, I start generally doing one of two things. I start desperately trying to prove that it's not true that I'm too small to play with the big kids, or I'm desperately terrified that it is true. Mm-hmm. But that became a dominant driver in my life. Well, go figure that I should become a global expert on the topic of influence, because the topic of importance became important to me at the age of 3.
Wow. That's so neat. You know, I love the fact that you can actually pinpoint where it was for you. I have several different instances like that, but that is just such clarity. And it makes so much sense to me how you came to do what you do and teach what you teach and help people and serve the way that you serve. It's fantastic.
Well, thank you. And most people can pinpoint some of those early memories.
Yeah.
And if you actually think about what those memories caused, you might start to get some hints into, okay, this makes sense why I tend to always say this one thing to myself, like I'm not good at speaking in public or nobody wants to listen to me or I'm not lovable. There's usually some early seeds to why you're always telling yourself those things.
Yeah, there sure are. You know, and I guess it all ties into, you know, there's a lot of things to do with that self-esteem and happiness. I mean, how do you, look, people have very different and strong views on happiness these days. So I'm going to ask a question about that. I mean, do you think there's a difference between kind of that fleeting happiness and lasting happiness? And how does it all kind of relate to achieving what you want to achieve?
Yeah, I actually love some of Aristotle's early teachings on this, you know. Aristotle was the first person in history to define that there were different types of happiness. He talked about hedonistic happiness, mm-hmm. which is like the happiness that comes legitimately from pursuits of the flesh, right? Like we have a really great latte and in that moment it makes us happy, or we get to cuddle a little puppy dog and oh, that baby just smiled at me. And those are all very appropriate forms of happiness, but they're hedonistic, right? They're fleeting and in the moment. But Aristotle also talked about eudaimonia. I love that name. I always think, okay, we could all be eudaimoniacs. <You know? laughs> But eudaimonia, he talked about, is the lasting happiness that comes from knowing you are a deep contribution to your family, your community, or the world at large.
Ooh.
And that's the kind of happiness that settles into your bones. And you know, because as soon as the latte is gone, the happiness is gone. But in eudaimonistic happiness, as opposed to hedonistic happiness, when you really know you're a contribution to others, your happiness just settles into your bones and it becomes the way you go about your day. So here's an interesting concept, right? Because what it means is our own influence, our ability to affect positive change in others, right? Because influence is just, do people know, like, and trust you enough that they'll take action based on what you recommend, right? But if you have enough influence that you can positively impact other lives, wow, your happiness is at stake, your own eudaimonia.
Wow, this is really, it's new to me. The term is new to me, but the concept is not. You know, that happens a lot for me, and I seem to be constantly in this element of, oh, wow, I didn't know that's what it was called. I've been teaching that for 12 years, right?
Who knew? Aristotle thought of it millennia ago,
what?
Right?
I didn't think of that? Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, how self-involved, but no. But it's really powerful, because what happens with that, there's a settling into knowing, because of this contribution, what you've done has ripple effects ongoing that you don't need to keep track of.
Yeah, it's very true. You know, influence in general, you know, because one of the core principles of influence is the more you give away your own influence, the more you get back.
Yeah.
You know, in other words, you can't make yourself famous, but you, in other words, you know, people can't stand on a chair at a networking event and say, hey, look at me, I'm so great, right? They would be shown the door faster than anything, right? But on the other hand, if somebody stood on a chair at a networking function and said, oh my God, Heather O'Neill, she's brilliant, she just walked in the room, you guys all need to meet her, that's gracious. That's the giving of influence to another people. And highly influential people really get this principle, right? They're constantly supporting and encouraging others, giving their influence away. They're being a deep contribution to their community. Ah, there's the eudaimonia, right? And the more influential you become, the more you help others walk their paths and be a contribution to the world, the greater your contribution is, the happier you are.
I love it. I absolutely love it. That's fantastic. Now, was that your dream of being able to do this and teach it? I mean, is that your big dream, or do you have more big dreams? What totally lights you on fire?
Oh, what a great question. You know, I have to say 15 years ago when I started to walk this path, I couldn't dream as big as my life is now.
Oh, that's awesome.
You know, and all I could dream was, geez, maybe I'll get to leave the corporate world and do something that's a bigger contribution to the world. That was as big as I could dream. And, you know, so I love Sheryl Sandberg's work, or, you know, Jennifer Huff has been talking about this concept in her work for years, which is the whole notion of just lean in.
Yeah.
You know, like if you think there's something that lights you up a little more, if you've got some, I like to call it a why doesn't somebody just. You know, if you've got a vocal complaint that you wish someone would fix in the world, well, maybe you're the person, right? Mm. And start, even if you give 10 minutes a day to focus on how could I be a bigger contribution in this area and lean in, you may very well find you're working in a whole new job, or you've quit your job and started a company, or you're doing something significantly different a year down the road just because you've leaned in and given yourself permission to have a little bit of courage to make a difference in that area.
Oh, that's fantastic. And you've said courage twice now, so I'm going to touch on that, because I think that a lot of the things that people do in everyday people do courageous things all the time. And I don't think that they actually look at it that way. It's easy to say that someone else is doing something courageous, right? But I think it's sometimes a little bit more difficult to see ourselves as courageous. And I think that's really important to acknowledge, that if you're doing something that's stepping outside of your comfort zone, if you're doing something that's beyond yourself, that's uncomfortable for you, but to help someone else, that's courageous. If even just looking at yourself, right? Sometimes, because people don't often do that enough.
Yeah, courage is such a fascinating conversation because courage is the first emotion, if you look at the scale of emotions, you know, it's the first emotion that's not inward facing. You know, like, so when we look at apathy and depression and anger and fear, those are always emotions that face inward. In other words, they're all about us and our own personal needs, right?
Yes.
And the courage is the tipping point between inward facing emotion and outward facing emotion, because caring and compassion and love and forgiveness and joy and peace are all outward facing emotions. They have a lot more to do with your eudaimonia, like who are you for the world, right? And in a sense, courage is therefore the tipping point between hedonistic happiness. Hedonistic happiness is all about me, right? Oh, I love that latte. I love these curtains. I love sitting on a park bench and enjoying the flowers. But hedonistic happiness is all about me and my needs, calming down my own inner fears, my own self-sabotage, my own inner dialogue. And so courage becomes that tipping point of turning your view outward to others and outward to the world. And the more your view is outward and the more your emotions are outward facing, the easier it is to be happy and lasting and really tuned in and turned on and passionate in the world.
Oh, that's fantastic. I really love that, that tipping point there. And when you do that, and when you're courageously taking these actions and to serve, it comes back, but it's not your focus about it coming back. It comes back tenfold, right?
Absolutely. You know, influence is almost like a currency, right? Except the difference between money and influence is the best thing you can do with your influence is spend it. Because
yes.
Spending your influence is almost like an investment that pays tenfold every time you spend it.
Oh, that's awesome. Now your book, I love the title, Mass Influence, The Habits of the Highly Influential. Why did you specifically choose it and why at this kind of time in the world?
Well, one of the things I was really seeing amongst a lot of the people I teach is influence is almost like a whole different skill set. It's a whole different paradigm. But a lot of people just don't understand how influence works, right?
Yeah.
And influence is, I like to say, it's as simple as breathing. There was a time in your life when you thought breathing was hard, right? You came out of that beautiful and warm environment. Some idiot whacked you on the back. You cried for a moment. And then you mastered the skill of breathing. And influence is a lot the same. Once you master it, you never walk through your day thinking, oh, my God, I got to breathe today. Where am I going to find the time?
Yes. So it becomes a habit, because I talk about like shifting patterns and habits, right? And so when you start doing it, it becomes so ingrained in you, like breathing, that it's easy.
Yes, absolutely. It's as simple as really just a different paradigm for how you move through your day, you know. And really what it comes down to is it's almost like a lot of us learned one sport. You know, as we were kids in the sandbox, we learned things like, I do this for you and you do that for me, sort of a tit for tat thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe we grew up and we learned how to network in business. Like we learned it was a good idea to offer to buy a colleague a coffee or lunch. And so we learned this certain rule book of how to be in society. And then you only have to try and phone up the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, and faster than you can say gatekeeper, you're going to know that there's a different set of rules when it applies to the highly influential. You can't just invite them for coffee or ask them to go to lunch, right?
Yeah.
And it's kind of like you've been playing one sport your whole life. And, you know, we might call that network marketing or referral, or if you want to use an analogy, we'd say that's basketball. And the way the highly influential operate is more like hockey. And you can't bring the basketball onto the hockey net, a hockey rink, and have no stick and no skates and expect to do okay on the hockey rink, right?
Yeah.
So one of the reasons I wrote my book was I just wanted to get people related to what's that etiquette of when you're dealing with the highly influential, and what are those really big mistakes that, boy, once you get them, you'd never make them again because they're so obvious. But most people just don't even understand that that thing's a mistake because they've been playing a different sport their whole life and they need to get related to the new sport.
Okay, so I'm going to ask you, what's like your one or two favorite habits and mistakes that that you might be able to share as tips for our listeners to be able to kind of go, oh, okay, I get what she's talking about?
Well, the biggest habit I would say is you got to give influence to get influence. So it's sort of like a paradigm shift to understanding your social media isn't to sell you, for example, right? So if you're in small business and you're promoting yourself on social media, I'd say stop that right now. Use your social media almost like you'd take an apple pie to the new neighbor when you want to meet the new neighbor, right? Use it to graciously shout out other people. You know, the more you have means of promoting the good work of other people, the more influential you'll become, right? And I do mean do that authentically. In other words, you never have to praise or shout out someone that you don't authentically love and admire. There's lots of influential people out there doing really great work. Don't ever be in a conversation of, you know, kind of being smarmy and saying, oh, I'm just going to help that person because it could help me, right?
Yeah.
That's, in fact, one of the biggest mistakes that people make. They start dealing it as though it's a transactional thing and they have to strategically think about helping someone regardless of whether they admire and like them, as opposed to just really giving out influence to people who deserve it.
That's a really great differentiation there. And it's so easy to spot now that you're saying it.
Yeah. But I mean, it's the true, right? There's a different energy when someone's, you know, the technical term for that I like to use is schmarmy, right? And, you know, because there's a lot of different definitions for authenticity out there, but here's mine. Authenticity is just your inside voice is saying the same thing as your outside voice. In other words, what you're thinking and what your motives are congruent with your actions and your words. That's what authenticity is. So you never want to give influence to someone that you don't deeply respect and admire because people can spot a phony a mile away.
Exactly. And there's so much out there that if you can't find something that you're in alignment with, that you agree with, that speaks to your heart, then you're not looking hard enough.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it, for me, that I just want to touch on what you just said about that inner voice and the outer voice. You know, it seems so when you're in alignment there's an element for me of peace. Is that, like, how does that play out for you?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, you know, because it's harmful to ourselves if we do things that aren't in alignment with what we feel is authentic. In other words, when we make our actions incongruent with our emotions, we create stress on ourselves. That's how we age, right? Like, if you're in a job you hate, or you're working with people you hate, or you're in business and you don't like your customers or your contractors, like, you're not doing yourself any favors because you're constantly putting yourself under the stress of, like, wanting to say things you can't or feeling inauthentic all the time. I would say shift your environment until you're only working with people that you deeply love and only doing things that you deeply love, or find a way to love them, because otherwise you're going to age yourself a lot quicker because you're constantly putting your body under that stress of that disconnect between your feelings and your actually words and actions.
That's fantastic. You know, I think that the way that you phrased it there, I have not heard. And it is for someone who's coming up on a big birthday this year, that aversion to wanting to age myself at all. If I didn't already do something I absolutely loved, I would be going out finding it. I'll tell you that right now. That's so true. What do you think when it comes to helping people to follow their dreams and do those things that they love and be in alignment there? What do you think is maybe the biggest mistake that people make?
I would say it's not taking action around the things that you're passionate about, right? And that's where there's that war between that inner dialogue and that focus on us. We got to say stay safe. You know, never take a financial risk. Certainly don't leave a great, good paying job to do something that's more meaningful to me, right? We have all kinds of self-sabotaging inner beliefs. And more society's waking up and saying, wow, life's short. Do I really want to spend 60 years or even 20 years in a career I hate when I don't actually even need the money anymore? And why am I doing this? Because it's just causing me stress and I'm always choking down things that I can't say. I'm feeling inauthentic. Wow, why don't I just leave that behind and start doing something that lights me up a little more? And you don't have to even know what that is, Like, that's why I say this whole concept of lean in that Sheryl Sandberg teaches, you know, guess what it might be and lean in that direction. Because the further you lean, the more you can see. I mean, I kid you not, I couldn't have dreamed as big as my life is now 15 years ago. But it came about from leaning in and following things that had more meaning to me every step of the way.
Oh, that's fantastic. Because, you know, I think that people don't want to make a step because they don't know where what the end result is going to be 10 steps down the road. So they don't take that first step. And, you know, I have teenagers right now. And so the position that they may end up loving may not actually be invented yet, to be honest, with how fast things are being created nowadays. Jobs, new jobs are coming, new technologies, new things are happening all the time. So they have to be able to lean in to take that first step without being able to see the light at the end of the tunnel, or they'll just get just stuck like so many people are. That's a really great analogy. Thank you for that.
Yeah. And you may not even be able to conceive the paradigm for the life you could have at this place where you are.
Yeah.
Right? Like if somebody had told me 15 years ago that I'd be a number one international best-selling author with a book that's been on the bestseller list for over 3 years, that I'd be speaking on big stages all over the world, that I'd run an organization of thought leaders that can collectively reach over 600 million people, like I would have told you you're freaking crazy. Like really, I would have. I couldn't even conceive that as a possibility for my life, you know?
Yeah.
And even now I look back on it and I'm kind of like, whoa, how did that happen? You know?
Yeah.
And yet it happens from like being confident in your strengths and humble about your weaknesses and being willing to look at your own limiting beliefs and your own self-sabotage and be willing to ask for help. And most importantly, to be willing to develop deep, deep relationships with other awesome leaders who can help you. You know,
it's not a solo world. You're right.
It really isn't. And I couldn't achieve a hundredth of what I've achieved if I weren't surrounded by incredible, amazing leaders who love me enough that they won't let me fail, nor would I ever let them fail. You know, because that's really what the Evolutionary Business Council is a community. It's a group of leaders who really have each other's back.
Yeah, and it's fantastic, and I definitely want you to share with the group a little info about that. But I just need to ask you another question here on this same topic. So right now, when I speak to you, when people see you on these stages, it looks like your life fits you. Now you're saying that, like, you know, like a tailored suit, right? It fits you. You belong there. But yet you're saying you couldn't have envisioned it years ago when you started toward it. So that transition, I love to think of, you know, kind of that growing into ourselves. Was there something that stands out as a shift in the way that you thought about yourself that enabled you to wear it in a way that's so congruent now?
I would have to say the strongest journey any of us could ever make, and this was very true for me, was the journey to my own authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, being real with the world about all the garbage that goes on in my own head, you know?
Yeah.
I'm too small to play with the big kids. I'm not good at speaking in public. Isn't that a cute inner dialogue for an international speaker to have? But there you have it, right? And or just, you know, even the notions of, well, I'm from the backwoods, northern Canada, nobody's going to listen to me. You know, the litany goes on, right? And most of us have a lot of this going on. But for me, the biggest journey was at least to admit that publicly. Because one of the reasons that I look like I belong on stage is that I'm honest to the world about who I am, warts and all.
Yeah.
You know, and therefore people can relate to me because they're like, oh yeah, I got those same warts. Cool. You know, and because I think we're past the time in history when people want heroes to idolize. You know, what we want actually are leaders who are real and leaders who understand that we all go through this same journey of beating the crap out of ourselves daily. And we have to figure out how to get on top of that if we ever want to do anything meaningful in the world. And when we actually talk about that openly and publicly and help each other get on top of all the crap that we do to ourselves, holy cow, there's a pretty amazing world possible that we can build together. In fact, that's why the vision statement of the Evolutionary Business Council is a conscious, sustainable world. Conscious just meaning that we're all free from our own self-sabotage and free from the injustices of the world.
It's so incredibly powerful personally and on such a large world level. I know that there are people that are going to be listening to this that are just as fired up as I am right now, and it'd be a disservice not to share with them how they can become one of these top influencers. How can they get more of you? Do you have tools and resources that you can share with them?
Oh, I would love to. You know, if you're just starting out and the whole conversation of influence is a new one to you, then I would love to give you a copy of my book. We still give the digital version away of my book complimentary. So if you go to massinfluencethebook.com, we both have a 30-day influence challenge you can do there. That it's basically, we teach you the basic habits of the highly influential by having you do little 2-minute exercises every day. It's kind of like we teach you to play hockey by putting you on the hockey rink and getting you to skate. You know, it's like that. But we also send you the links where you can get the digital versions of my book for free, whether you're on Kindle, Kobo, iBooks, whatever you like. All the links are there. And if you're already down the path of really stepping into leadership and wanting to have impact in the world, feel free to come and check out the Evolutionary Business Council. We're at ebcouncil.com. We have a number of our senior members that volunteer to speak to people who are interested in joining, just to talk to them a little bit more about what the organization is. So if that inspires you, just go to ebcouncil.com and click on the How to Apply link and find out more.
That's fantastic. And listeners out there, if you're rapidly trying to scribble all that down, I'm going to put links both to the free gift of the ebook at massinfluencethebook.com, as well as the ebcouncil.com, and as well as Teresa's website too, so that you can learn a little bit more about her and all the amazing things that she's doing. Teresa, I can't even tell you, this has been such a pleasure, and I know that I'm going to get some great feedback from this podcast, because you gave so many nuggets of people that are going to get them thinking that they're not going to be able to just close their eyes without going, oh, I'm still fired up, I got to do something. And that's the goal, right? That's the goal in moving from fear to fire, is to take that action, that first step, like you said, leaning in, like you said, and then coming into your authentic self, where you're really serving a bigger purpose and influencing the world in a major, massive way. So thank you very, very much.
Oh, Heather, it's been a joy. Thank you. I deeply appreciate you having me here.